This is Greg Waters, and I'm here with Jessica Martucci. It is June 22nd, 2017, and we're speaking today with Dr. Rory Cooper at the, the Human Engineering Research Laboratories here in Pittsburgh, where he serves as founding director. Thank you for taking the time to meet with us.
You're welcome. It's a pleasure to be interviewed.
I should also say that this interview is being conducted as part of the Scientists with Disabilities Project at the Chemical Heritage Foundation. So let's start at the very beginning. Where were you born?
I was born in East LA in California.
And what year? What's your birthday?
I was born in 1959.
Okay. How was East LA in 1959?
We didn't live there for long. We stayed there, I think we were about 5 years old when we moved out of East LA. Mm-hmm. And moved to Riverside, California.
Okay.
And lived there for about 5 years, and then we moved to San Luis Obispo, California. Mm. And I finished up grammar school, and then went to middle school and high school in San Luis Obispo. So I consider that kind of my hometown.
Could you talk about your parents? What were their names?
My father's Alan Cooper. My mother's Alice Cooper, not the musician. my mother was an automobile mechanic. My father actually was a model maker, which is a type of machinist. But then he went to, and he was also in the Army Reserve. And then he went to college, studied biology, and eventually, he went to Cal Poly Pomona, then to UC Riverside. University of California, Riverside. Mm-hmm. And then we moved to San Luis Obispo because he got a job at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo as a professor of biology and agriculture.
What were they doing originally in East LA when you were born?
My dad was a model maker and my mother worked in a bank.
Okay. Do you have siblings?
I do. I have a brother and a sister.
Older, younger?
Younger. I'm the oldest.
Okay.
We're all engineers.
Is that your father's influence?
He's a biologist. I think it's the influence of being the model maker and the and the mechanic. And my parents had an automotive machine shop my entire time growing up. So even when my dad was a professor, he still worked there part-time, and my mother ran the business.
So did he transition later in life to being a professor?
He did, yes.
When did he go to school? What was the process of that?
I don't think he was that old. He was in his mid-30s, I think, when he finally became a professor. But, you know, it was a family business with my grandfather. Mm-hmm. So it was Cooper and Sons Automotive.
Gotcha.
And so they maintained the business. Mm-hmm. And like I said, that was my mom's. I worked in it as a kid. That's kind of what got me introduced to introduction to engineering, because I had to learn to operate to work on cars.
Right. They put you to work early?
Yeah. I pretty much worked all my free time after school when I was about 12 years old besides doing, you know, school and track and field and cross country. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, it's a family business. You got to help out when people need help. So I learned to operate the lathe and the mill and the brake lathe and put engines in and take them out and do exhaust systems. That's probably why I kind of lean towards engineering. Especially after my engineer injury, I couldn't really, it would have been tough to do that except for manage a business like that. So engineering allowed to stay hands-on and creative, but in a different way.
How old were you when you guys moved to San Luis Obispo?
I was 10 or 11.
Okay. So you had moved around previously?
Yeah.
A couple times. All in California, though?
All in California, yeah.
Okay. Gotcha. And so what was growing up in California during that time like?
It was great. I mean, moving from Riverside to San Luis Obispo was funny because it was like 120 degrees in the summer, and in Riverside it's out in the desert, and then San Luis Obispo is on the coast, and mm-hmm. it's like 70 degrees, so... For the first few weeks, we were freezing. I remember we were the only ones wearing jackets in August in San Luis Obispo. San Luis Obispo is a great place to grow up. You know, it's a one of California's coastal towns. It's it wasn't too large. It was an interesting town because about half the population were students at either Cal Poly, San Luis Obispo, or Cuesta College, and the other half were residents. And most of them either had a business, worked for the prison, the men's colony there, or worked for Caltrans, had a center, that's California Department of Transportation, or for Pacific Gas and Electric. Mm. There was a power plant there.
Mm. Gotcha. Is that Diablo Canyon?
Well, when I was a kid, Diablo Canyon didn't open up, although my first job after becoming an engineer was at Diablo Canyon Nuclear Power Plant. But no, there was a gas-fired power plant in Morro Bay, which is just a few miles from San Luis Obispo. That was owned by PG&E, and then PG&E, I don't know if they already owned the land, but they bought or owned the land, and they built Diablo Canyon starting probably in the late 1970s, early 1980s. I think it was in the late 1970s.
So were you and your siblings close in age and also in relationship? Did you guys?
So we're all close in relationship. My sister's 2 years younger than I am, and my brother's 7 years younger than I am.
Okay. Gotcha.
All of us are Cal Poly graduates. My sister's an industrial engineer. My brother and I are both electrical engineers. My brother actually works for PG&E in Diablo Canyon. My sister married and moved up to the Bay Area, and she works for a company called Advanced Micro Stepper.
Nice.
The name actually is outdated now because they make machines to make microchips, and that process is entirely optical now.
So, having driven through San Luis Obispo a few times, it's a kind of not sleepy, but it's like a surf town almost.
Yeah, a little bit. It's got the famous Madonna Inn for those of you that know, like the newlywed game or the dating game.
That's close to Morro Bay, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. A beautiful area.
Yeah.
So did you surf at all growing up, or was that a part of your
life?
No,
the water up in San Luis Obispo is cold, right? That's 50, 60 degree water there. I mean, I tried surfing a couple of times. You have to have a wetsuit to surf up there. It's surfing's kind of more, well, there's a group surfing kind of culture up by Monterey. I was a runner as a kid, and I ran track and cross country for Laguna Junior High School and San Luis Obispo Senior High School and San Luis Obispo. And, for me, it was more fun to run along the beach. You know, Pismo Beach is a beautiful, long, flat beach in California. And actually, the beach between Morro Bay and Cayucas, it's about 5 miles apart, nice, beautiful beach. And just below Morro Bay, there's the dunes, or even in Napomo, that area, there's some dunes, so you can do some hill running. It's a nice area, too, because there's San Luis Obispo's kind of in the valley, and there's hills surrounding it. So it's just a beautiful countryside.
Did you spend much time in the outdoors as a kid?
I did. I was very active in the Boy Scouts. Actually became an Eagle Scout. And our scout, we had a great scout troop, Troop 319. And we would do a lot of camping in that whole area. Plus we had Camp San Luis Obispo and Camp Hunter Liggett, the military bases. So they were very supportive of a lot of Boy Scouts to camp. And then there's the Cuesta Ridge, and there's great hiking trails there. La Ponza National Forest, Lopez Lake. So I don't think you can live in San Luis Obispo without being some kind of outdoor person.
Right.
Even when we moved back there after I got injured in the Army, we, and even to this, my wife and I, we love to bike and swim and do triathlons and things like that. So it's just that kind of culture. The weather's kind of ideal for being outdoors almost all year long.
You mentioned running. Is that just a natural progression from being a kid? Why did you start running?
I started in Riverside. You know, they had like some school track meets and things like that. My grandfather entered me into some of the, you know, like city little city races for kids. And then when I went to San Luis Obispo, I was always good in science, and our science teacher happened to be the track and cross country coach, and of course he pitched to the kids in science class. Most of them sort of groaned and said, "Oh yeah, I'd like to go out. I'll go out and try." Kind of unusual, I guess. Maybe not today, but when I was growing up, scientists were kind of the Big Bang Theory stereotype, and
right. And
so it was a little bit unusual to like science and engineering and also like sports. So, and I liked it. So, I started in junior high and did it in high school and ran in the Army and still do marathons and a hand cycle today.
Going back to like grade school, were you a good student?
I was not a great student in grade school because I had dyslexia and I was undiagnosed, and so and I had a and I have an astigmatism, so I think it was in fifth grade they did an IQ test and I scored very high, and they were like, "Well, this doesn't make any sense. How can he score high on the IQ?" And then so they actually wound up having me sent me to get my eyes checked and to a learning specialist. And they, "Oh, he needs glasses and he has a dyslexia." And
then
my grades turned around.
Was dyslexia recognized?
I don't know if dyslexia was a recognized diagnosis at the time, but I think it was diagnosed as a reading difficulty.
Gotcha.
So I was basically given I had a reading tutor for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. I mean, the glasses helped quite a bit. If you have an astigmatism and everything's kind of fuzzy, reading is not a popular thing to do. Mm-hmm. So you wonder why you fall behind in your reading, but it's a lot harder for you, and you get a headache, pretty quickly. And then on top of that, having the dyslexia. But once I got the glasses and worked on my reading, I learned some compensatory strategies, and it got a lot better.
Could you talk about those? What kind of strategies would you use to? How did you deal with it?
Just reading more carefully, then also not just trying to read the words, but read the context, right? What does it mean?
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. And so your grades improved as you...
Yeah, after that it was fine.
You're fine. Yeah. So in high school you got...
I got good grades in middle school and high school, yeah. Yeah, my sister was a 4.0 through all middle school and high school, so it's all relative. I like to do sports and Boy Scouts and other things, and so my grades are, I think I graduated high school with like a 3.3, 3.4,
gotcha.
But I got a 4.0 in my junior, senior year,
right.
So I could do it if I applied myself. I was planning to join the Army, so.
Gotcha.
But I did all the college prep classes and for the UC system. I knew I eventually wanted to go to college, and I knew I had good enough grades to get into the UC system.
You naturally tended towards science as a kid? What is the root of that, do you think? Or is that more engineering with your background, with your family's business? And
I don't know.
Yeah.
I liked the science class. I had some advantage because of my parents' business. Mm-hmm. My grandfathers were mechanics too, so that helped. I grew up working on things. But I think that I had good teachers in middle school and high school. It was good science teachers, and they made it fun.
Do you remember specific teachers that...
Yeah, Mike Aiello, Ron Hamley, Brian Waterbury,
Which one was your track teacher or your track coach?
Actually, it turned out Brian Waterbury and Ron Hamley were both track coaches. Huh. Brian Waterbury is kind of the one that recruited me and got to me. He was a long distance coach, and then Ron Hamley was a hurdler and sprinter coach, but he was like our physics teacher, and Waterbury was actually a math teacher, and Mike Aiello was a biology chemistry teacher, the other thing is that they had all just gotten out of school when I was going to middle school, so the age differential wasn't that great. They were really engaged. They were trying some new things. And I liked it. And then when I moved to high school, Waterbury moved to high school. We went from the middle school to the high school. Mm-hmm. And then the other track coach at the high school was a guy named Bruce Smith, who was also a science teacher. Mm-hmm. It's a little unusual, actually, that you're. A lot of times, the coaches are from the physical education department or some other department, not science teachers. Maybe with track coaches, that might be a little different. But that kind of, and they were good teachers. So,
what was your specialty in track?
Long distance in high school, I think in middle school I did the half mile and the mile, and then in high school I did the mile and the 2 mile, and I ran cross country.
Gotcha. And what else were you doing other after-school activities?
So I wrestled for a while as well.
How'd that go?
Good. Yeah. I actually was a good wrestler as well. I also was in the chess club, and we had a great chess team. Actually, Steve Jacoby was on our chess team. He went on to become the U.S. National Amateur Chess Champion.
Nice. Even then, he was amazing, I imagine.
He was amazing then, which was great, because, you know, it's the first top four players that count in a chess team, and if you have a guaranteed win, that's not bad. Kind of said makes the little life a little easier for the rest of us.
I did want to ask, too, about your dad. At what point in your life did he become a professor?
I was in middle school.
Okay. Do you remember him? Did he ever bring his work home with him, or did he ever take you to the university? Were you exposed to that?
A little bit. My sister more so than I was. I mean, the university in San Luis Obispo was already kind of engaged. I got third place, I think, in our science fair, and it was hosted at the university.
What was your project?
I designed a motorcycle. Had a little handmade model I made of it, and all the drawings I'd done. That was another hobby of ours, was motorcycles. So.
Nice.
Building them?
Yeah, building them, riding them, yeah.
You mentioned you are an Eagle Scout.
Yeah.
What was your project?
My Eagle Scout project was to design a park. Well, it was first to save the land around this lake near my home called Laguna Lake, and to have the city buy the land and create a park. So if you look in the Telegram Tribune from those times back in the microfiches, and you'll see my name a lot fighting a guy named a developer from Los Angeles named Searchy or something like that.
And you were 18 probably at the time, around there?
Younger? No, I was like 12, 13.
Oh, nice. Even younger.
Going to the planning committee meetings, and the county commission meetings, and the city council meetings, arguing that there was enough development around the lake already and that the city should buy the land. And I won. They did. They built a park, and the park is still there today.
Nice.
What year was that?
1972,
73. Huh. Did you feel...
The title of my Eagle Scout project is "This Is Our Lake."
Nice.
Did you feel an affinity with the environmental movement that was sort of building?
I did. As a matter of fact, part of my Eagle project was I created a multimedia presentation using 35mm slides and movie film, I coordinated it all with a punch tape computer so that it would have voiceover, and then slides would show, and then the movie would come, the movie clips. You know, they would stop the slides, the movie clips, and sound would come. And I think that's probably one. I think the developer just couldn't believe that I would show up to like 2 years of planning commission meetings and county commissioner meetings and all that stuff and city council meetings to voice my opinion against him. But I got the schools, so the high school, the two middle schools, and all the grammar schools to let me show this multimedia presentation, and then we showed it to the city council and the county commissioners. And
how did you acquire the skills to make that presentation? That was pretty complicated.
Yeah, it was. It was kind of interesting. When I was in seventh grade, I was what they called the assembly commissioner for our middle school. And that's so you kind of organize the school assemblies. And I was getting ready to set up for an assembly, and this guy was tearing down from this seminar workshop he was doing for the teachers on using multimedia in education. And he was from the San Luis Obispo County School District. And I was just, you know, just fascinated by the technology. And so I got his name, and I convinced my mother to take me over to see to the county schools offices to see. And they had and he had been doing these. They bought this equipment, but nobody had. He was trying to convince teachers to do it, and you know, teachers are busy, and there's a pretty steep learning curve on this, and so it kind of was sitting there. And I convinced him to let me use it, to teach me how to use it, then let me use it for my Eagle Scout project.
So you're a pretty bold kid.
Yeah.
And you must have had very supportive parents, it sounds like. They took you to all these meetings, and then they took you
Actually, my parents didn't take me to the meetings. A friend of my parents did. It was a World War II vet, a guy named Charles Dills. He was a P-51 fighter pilot in World War II. And he thought it was just... He was an Eagle Scout too, and he just thought it was being a World War II vet and serving in Europe, and he thought it was a great civics lesson, right? And so, so my parents were like, "Well, if you want to go, and Charles wants to take you, have fun." I think Charles just didn't, and he up until the day he died, he was the kind of guy that would write letters to the editor and things like that, and so he. I think he just thought he. I think he had a good time, just seeing me be an environmentalist and fight the fight, and that's. And it turns out it worked. I showed my movie, and then they actually did some. Then the guy that I was working with convinced the school district that maybe we shouldn't be selling this to teachers. We should be. Talking to the students, and so they offered like an after-school program after that, and so he and I went and we taught some other kids how to use it, and then we actually, after I showed my movie to the city council and the county commissioners, they asked the middle school, and I was part of the group, to do one about our city and our county, and just kind of a promotional thing to promote the city and the county.
I'm also curious, because of your like interest in engineering and mechanical things, were you paying attention and interested in the space program that was going on when you were...
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah. I mean, that was a big motivation for me, and fearful, too, because, I mean, I watched us land a man on the moon, watched Neil Armstrong, and that I was blown away, and that, I was still in grammar school at the time, but it kind of made me want to be an engineer. On the other hand, in the 70s, NASA's space program reduced considerably, and they were laying off a lot of engineers. So your guidance counselors are like saying, oh, I don't know, you know, you gotta think about other things, or it's hard to find a job for engineers now, you know. And then it all worked out.
I know that you went to the Army immediately after high school, correct?
I did, yeah.
We'll come back to that. But briefly, was it always expected in your family that you would go to college, that you and your siblings would go to college?
It was expected of my sister. I don't think it was expected of me. I think my parents were sort of ambivalent whether I went to college or not.
Did they push you in any direction as far as what to do with life?
Just to get on my own and be independent.
Right.
So I knew I wanted to go to college, and I actually knew I wanted to study engineering, but the Army was a way to become independent, serve my country, right? I was influenced by my uncle who served in the Army, my dad, Charles Dills I'd mentioned, my Boy Scout troop leader was a Vietnam veteran. Several of my high school teachers were Vietnam veterans, and some were World War II veterans. So I felt like I was important to serve.
At what point, how early in life did you realize that that was an option and that was something you wanted to do?
I think I knew when I was 12, 13 years old, right, that I was probably going to do that, and then look at what my options would be, stay on, go to college, come back as an officer. I knew I didn't want to go to college first. I wanted to see if I could see a little bit of the world, be able to have a little more, you know, get a little more mature. If I was going to join, you know, make a career of the Army as an officer, have served as enlisted first, get an idea of that was something I wanted to do. So those were...
Was there a ROTC program at your high school?
Yep.
Were you involved with that?
Nope, I was not.
Not at all? Why was that?
I liked sports and we had a family business, and then I had sports, and then I had school, and I took 7 periods, so... And there's just in Boy Scouts, there's just only so many hours in the day.
Gotcha. So what was the process of signing up for the military?
That was easy. I just signed up to take the ASVAB, and that's the Armed Services Vocational Aptitude Battery.
How did you do on it?
I did very well.
Pushed you towards engineering, or was it?
I could do anything once I score on the ASVAB. So, of course, when you do that, the recruiters start calling. And then... You take the ASVAB at all, they start calling. You take the ASVAB and score in the upper 10%. They call all the time.
Right. So what were those conversations like? They were just pulling you in different directions as far as options that you had?
So it was really a tussle between the Marine Corps and the Army.
Right.
I was kind of time limited because it was in 1976. If you joined in 1976, you'd get the GI Bill from the Vietnam era. Joined after 1976, you get the Montgomery GI Bill. It wasn't nearly as good.
Gotcha.
Really, for me, the hemming and hawing was a little bit more between Army and Marine Corps. And the other hemming and hawing was, where could I go? Choice of assignment, choice of MOS, military occupational specialty. So there was a little bit,
a
few months of negotiating back and forth.
Did you have family members and those other veterans that you had mentioned in your life? Were they pushing you in any direction?
No, not really.
So, mostly
to them, it was just more about, you know, yeah, it's a good thing. You're a young man. You should give some time to your country. Well, you got to figure out what you want to do.
So, what did you decide on as far as your role in the military?
Well, so I, unfortunately, you know, I joined it. I took the ASVAB like in October or September, and that's not really a good time to take the ASVAB because, the jobs start to fill up over the course of they go on a calendar year, so the types of jobs. I was trying to get something in electronics, and I also didn't want to enlist for 4, 5, or 6 years, so the Marine Corps basically said, well, you just join the Marine Corps. We'll tell you where to go. We'll tell you what to do. you know, your scores are really good, you'll likely get what you want, but, and then I said, all right, so I go to the Army. The Army said, well, yeah, we can, here's a list of things, and you qualify for everything, but I need people in these things, and they can offer your duty station. So I offered for Europe. I said, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to go and see something, and mm-hmm. that kind of restricted my MOSs. So I wound up being in what they call a unit armorer, which is the basically the person that repairs the weapons.
Gotcha.
Which kind of was pretty easy for me because I had the background and the mechanical background right. and aptitude.
So weapons being small arms and...
Yep, like the gotcha. Pistols and machine guns and hand grenades and those things.
Gotcha. What kind of specialized training was that? So you had basic training and then you had to go...
Yeah, this is in the logic of the Army. I was enlisted in California. I could have gone to Fort Ord for basic training, but no, the Army sent me to Fort Dix, New Jersey. Mm-hmm. 40 years ago this week.
Nice. And what was that time like? I mean, I imagine it was very exciting. And
yeah, well, you know, they put you on a pair of yellow footprints like those on the floor over there, which a friend of mine gave me to remind me, although if you notice, those are Marine Corps yellow footprints. He was a Marine colonel. to remind me that I went astray. and people start, and they start yelling at you, right? Mm-hmm. And you're sleep deprived, they cut all your hair off, take all your clothes away, take all your money away, and give you new clothes, and...
Sounds like a good time.
And a whole new name.
Mm-hmm.
So, kind of makes you wonder what you got yourself into, and you're pretty far away from home, right? And, but, you know, you kind of learn to go with the flow. after a few days, it's, well, it took me, you know, after you kind of get over the initial shock and the sleep deprivation, you realize that lots of people have gone through this before. It's a process.
You're not special.
Yeah. And then you also sort of realize that you just do what you're told.
Yeah.
You're on quest, you just do what you're told, right? And I was in great shape, so that wasn't an issue for me. And
prior to joining the Army, had you spent time away from home at all?
Yeah, I'd spent some summers with my grandparents, and we'd vacation with my grandparents, so. And in Boy Scout camps, I didn't really have any real separation anxiety from my parents, which that's a hard, you know, that for some people is a hard thing. And of course, you know, when I was in, there was no Skype or email or texting. You couldn't even call home. You basically could write letters. I'd write a letter once a week or so.
And what was your family's reaction to you wanting to join the military? They were all for it?
Fine.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Was there any concern? I mean, Vietnam had just ended, correct?
Yeah.
Was there some concern there that perhaps, well, that the war was over, but there was, I mean, joining the military is always hazardous.
I mean, they never expressed it to me. I mean, there was a lot of hostility towards the military at that time.
Yeah.
I think my parents were, you got to do something with your life. This is a good thing to get started.
Gotcha.
And so, yeah, they never pressured me one way or the other. And it was good for me. The military has still been good to me.
Yeah. So you would go to basic training. How long does basic training last?
Mine was about 10 weeks.
Okay. Does that include specialized training for your job? That's extra?
Well, it was just basic infantry training.
Gotcha. And where'd you go after that?
Fort Jackson, South Carolina.
Gotcha. What were you doing there?
That was my first exposure to the New Jersey and first exposure to South Carolina, which also it was the first time I saw Washington, D.C., because the Army is an interesting organization. You know, I was 17 years of age. I couldn't even go to Europe yet because you had to have been 18 because Europe was a forward deployment because of the Cold War and the 10 divisions of Russians sitting on the border. So they gave me a plane. They gave me a train ticket, dropped me off at the train station, and said, "You're going to go to D.C. You're going to have to, you got to lay over there, and then you got to get on another train. You got to go to Charlotte, Charlottesville, Jacksonville, South Carolina.
Okay.
I think it is, or Charlottesville. I'm not sure exactly." Right outside Fort Jackson, and so actually we had a layover, so in my Army uniform, went walking around, saw the Washington Monument, some of the stuff on the Mall, got back on the train. Mm-hmm. Kind of interesting that they have the faith that you have the the wherewithal to actually get where they want you to go.
Had you gone, you were with a group on this trip?
Yeah, technically, so right? They gave us a bunch of plane, you know, all of us train tickets, and
right.
Some people were going to, like, you know, Fort Bragg, North Carolina, and Fort Lee, Virginia. And
so were there people that you went through basic with that were doing the same thing you were, that were going to go eat the same?
Oddly enough, no.
Just you?
I actually joined on the buddy system with a guy named Matt Moore, and he wound up going to Fort Lee, Virginia, and I wound up going to go to Fort Jackson. You're supposed to go through the Army together. So much for that. Even when we got to basic training, I was in one battalion, he was in another, so we might see each other on the parade field walking by, and that was about it. So that's kind of went with, you know, go with it. And Fort Jackson's where I learned how to do the small weapons repair.
Gotcha. And how long was that training?
That was about 8 weeks.
Gotcha. And you stayed there after the 8 weeks, or were you deployed elsewhere?
So I was supposed to go to jump school, and then that kind of fell through. And then I was supposed to go to Fort Polk, Louisiana, and that's when I went to talk to my company commander and said, "No, well, you know, sir, when I signed up, I said I waived my, you know, I chose this MOS so that I could go to Europe, and now you're sending me to Fort Polk, Louisiana, and I think we have a deal here." And it got a little odd discussion about questioning the wisdom of the Army. I kind of said, well, you know, a deal's a deal, right? And most people didn't want to go overseas. So I said, you should be happy that I'm volunteering to go overseas. So I had to hang around for a little while. And then he said, well, you can't go overseas. You're not 18. So I said, well, then why don't you send me to jump school? And then he said, all right, I'll put you in for jump school. And then he came back and said, your recruiter called and said he'd like you to come back home. And then I do a hometown recruiter program. So we're going to send you back to California until you turn 18 to work as a hometown recruiter.
Was that common? They would send people back home to...
If you were smart and a good kid, yeah, they'd send you back home. I mean, usually one in the recruiting office that was a hometown recruiter.
Gotcha.
Yeah, the idea was that there'd be somebody in the office that had just graduated from high school, might even know you, right? I mean, I graduated in June, and I was back there, like, in October, mid-September, October. And so, of course, I knew all the... a lot of the kids in the high school, and a lot of the kids in a lot of the freshmen at the community college who had been at the high school, and so, you know, went to them to, like, school assemblies, and then worked in the office.
But you had in no way expected that that would have been your job.
No, I knew that was a temporary job.
Okay, how long did that last?
Until I turned 18.
And then you.
Then they got my orders. You're going to Germany. I turned 18 in November, and they. Sent me to Germany.
Where did you serve in Germany?
Well, first I went to play what they call a repo depot, replacement depot. It was an old prison in Frankfurt. And then I was there for a few days. And then the same thing, they gave me a train ticket. And said, then you're going to go to Worms. And they said, oh, well, you're... Because I was an Eagle Scout and I'd done the hometown recruiting, I got promoted, so I was... one rank above most of the people in the repo depot. And so they said, you have to drop these people off at these bases and you're the last guy on the line. And so that's the thing about the Army, you know, you're the highest ranking person, you're in charge, even though you're, like, only one step up from the bottom rung, you know, you are in charge of the guys on the bottom rung, so it's okay. So I dropped those guys off. I got to Worms, Germany. Martin Luther's trial was held there, the Diet of Worms. And I got there, and there's nobody there. Every other base, every other train station, there was somebody there. Picked the guy up. I handed him over, gave him their orders. They signed off. I went on to the next, took the next guy. I get to mine. There's nobody there. And I don't speak German. And I go to somebody in the train station. I said, where's the army base? And they just said, out the door, to the first street, make a left, and keep walking. And I had my my duffel bag and my overseas bag, and I hoped it wasn't 20 miles away. And turned out it was a couple miles down the road. And I got there, I was on the back side of the base, but I didn't know how big the base was either, so I just climbed the fence. threw my bags over the fence, climbed the fence.
Were they supposed to send someone for you?
They were, but
so it goes.
Communications weren't great at the time, and there was no way to call or anything. So, just found the MPs, showed them where I am. This is my orders. This is where I'm supposed to go. They're like, oh, that's three buildings over on the left. Go knock on the door. And by that time, it was 11 o'clock on a Friday night or something like that. And went in. That's you. All right, we've been expecting you. So that's nice. How come nobody was there to meet me? I don't know. I think they were expecting me the next day. Somehow they got the orders for
gotcha.
I showed up a day earlier than they were told I was going to be there. It's fine.
What was your assignment on base there in Germany? I guess the larger question is, how large was the military presence in Germany at the time, and what was the mission? What was going on at the time?
About 500,000 people at the time. It was the Cold War. Our mission was to deter the Russians from attacking Western Europe, basically, right? So that's it. I was assigned to a unit called 3rd Ordnance Battalion, 59th Ordnance Brigade, 32nd Air Defense Artillery Command, which we, our unit actually was, oversaw Pershing missiles, the short range or medium range nuclear missiles in Europe.
And what was.
My job was to make sure that all their machine guns and stuff were
in
good working order if anything bad happened.
Gotcha. What was life like on base or off base in Germany?
So it turns out that the base I was on, I could have walked around to the other side. It was about a mile, square mile of space. It was not very big at all. About 1,500 of us were on the base. And there were two types of soldiers there. There were the barracks rats that basically just lived on base and complained about how miserable it was that they were in Germany. And there were all those of us that walked out the gate to see what was on the other side. And so I was one that.
How often did you guys go off base?
My friends and I, we went off base, several times a week, most weekends, every chance we got. As a runner, I'd go off base every single day to run. It was pretty boring running around the one road the one perimeter road around our base. Even to go to the gym was off post, so. I was off post all the time.
How large was the town where the base was located?
Worms was about 50,000 people at that time. It's about 70,000 now.
Gotcha.
I took the German classes and learned German. I actually married a German girl. We've been married for 35 years.
You guys met there?
Yep.
Nice. How did you meet her?
A German-American friendship dance.
Nice.
Her sister introduced us.
Did she speak English?
Nope.
You spoke enough German.
Yep.
Gotcha. How was learning German? Is that?
Actually, it's difficult to get started, but it's because it's very rule based and very strict. On the other hand, English is a Germanic language, so once you understand German, you understand English better. Mm. But English is a very forgiving language, and especially Americans, we kind of let you. Could throw a bunch of words out there, and most people will sort of figure out the meaning and let you get by. Germans are got to be done properly. But I learned pretty well. And I was lucky that because a lot of times, back in the late 70s, early 80s, you could still speak German, and the Germans would speak German back to you. Hmm. Our nieces and nephews. They speak German to me because I speak German fluently. We speak German at home, but if our American friends come over, they speak English to them right away. Because they have English in school starting in the fourth grade, And they watch German, they watch American TV, they're on the American internet. They don't even have an accent.
So you met your wife, how long before you guys got married after you met?
3 years.
Gotcha. So you guys dated for, well, you were there the entire time, or were you?
No, I got injured in part of that time, got sent home, so that kind of
gotcha.
Messed up our courtship for a while.
How long were you in Germany before you got injured?
I was in Germany for 3 years before I got injured, but okay. I, almost 3 years, and then we had been dating for a year when I got injured.
Okay. You want to take a break?
Yeah.